hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazell, Jeff Chaney, and Todd Singer.
Welcome, everybody, to the No Better Than Average podcast. This is episode 94. I'm here with a co-host, Jacob Cazell. Hi, Jacob.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Todd. How are you doing?
And we've got our special guest, Will Carroll. Hi, Will.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
We'll get to more of an introduction later. Let me do some housekeeping. If you would like to call in and leave a comment, our number is 317-643-1212. You can subscribe to our newsletter at nobettershow.com/join. And please support the show at Patreon, patreon.com/nobettershow. We've asked Will to join us because he is a technology guy, and I wanted to ask him a couple questions that have come up recently on this show, and one of those is about the Olympics. One of our co-hosts, who sadly cannot join us tonight, Jeff, thought that the U.S. swimmer that just completely blew the competition away, it might have been because she just had access to better drugs than the rest of the athletes in the Olympics. And Will, you indicated to me that that was probably not the case. That's exactly who we're talking about.
Yeah, Katie Ledecky is just better than everybody else. And you know, you can say what you want. To me, here's the thing about drug tests. They work. They really, really work. They're almost impossible to get by. There's no such thing as masking agents. This is one of my great bugaboos in life. If people say, oh, well, you can get something that hides from a drug test. No, you can't. It doesn't exist. There's ways to kind of, you know, mess with the sample. But even then, one of the things people do it's for urine tests, they'll take diuretics. And that puts more water out of your body and into your urine. So your urine is more dilute. But a urine sample has to have a certain gravity to it. And if it's too dilute, that's a penalty. It's just like you tested positive for drugs. So for Katie Ledecky or anyone else in an Olympic sport, they are required to take tests both in competition and out of competition. They're required to take tests randomly and not randomly. Now, a lot of people don't understand the not randomly. They're like, well, I thought it was a random testing program. The fact is, it's actually both. If you win a race at a major competition, which obviously the Olympics is, they test you. It's a winner's test. So when Usain Bolt blows the field away, he gets a test. Whoever it was that won the shot put, they get tested. Essentially, if you win a medal, you are going to get tested. And you're going to get tested right after the competition. So, in that case, Katie Ledecky was tested probably, when I saw her the other night handing all her medals to Bryce Harper, it was like 5-6 medals. She took 5 or 6 drug tests, and they fire those through. The other thing to keep in mind is we just had 15 different medalists stripped of their medals due to drug tests. Not from Rio, but from Beijing in 2008. They keep those samples. So let's say we're at 2024, and let's say Los Angeles gets the Olympics in 2024. We could be there, and they will go back and retest samples from 4 years ago, 8 years ago, and say, you know what? We didn't know about drug X. I wonder if Katie Ledecky had access to this. And they'll have a sample available to test. And at this point, Katie Ledecky, and I think there's 3 Olympic swimmers that have tested positive. One of those, Michael Phelps. Other than those 3, all 3 males that I know of, and again, I'll say there could be some that I don't know of, Obviously, not swimming is not one of my big beats. But Katie Ledecky, Lily King, the very outspoken swimmer who swam against a Russian swimmer that had it, none of those failed a test or have previously failed a test. So to me, they're clean.
So, you know, that's interesting because I didn't realize that they kept the samples and went back and looked at them. Do you know what the look back period is?
They keep them indefinitely.
Really?
Yeah, they keep them indefinitely. The problem is the testing tends to be destructive. You know, if you take a certain amount of, urine and you test it, it's essentially destroyed. So you can't, like, test it and test it again and test it again and test it again. So at that point, you know, there's only so much you can take and only so much that they keep and freeze and save for the future.
So, you know, that's interesting that you say that. So you said they'll look back in 2024 and say in 2016 that Ledecky had access to some drug X. Now it's considered a enhancing drug, one of the PEDs. But maybe in 2016 it wasn't. I mean, is it retroactively penalized, or how does that
work? No, and that's a very good point, because Lily King, who's a student at Indiana University and won 2 medals, spoke out against the Russian swimmer that was one of her competitors. Now, her competitor had tested positive once for a substance and then recently tested positive for a substance called meldonium. Now, meldonium is extremely controversial for a couple reasons. First off, it was widely used by the Russians. You might not know, I'm trying to remember. I think it was Evremova that was the girl that got caught up in this. But Maria Sharapova, the tennis player, is currently under a 2-year suspension for using meldonium. So she's going to take her time and model, run her billion-dollar business, and go to Harvard Business School for the next 2 years. Tough penalty.
Yeah. It's hard to be a billionaire.
Yeah, exactly. Meldonium was not illegal until January 1st, 2016. Now, a number of athletes got caught up in this. They'd been taking it. They'd been given it by their doctors or by their federation in some cases. And what they said was, as of January 1st, 2016, no more meldonium. Okay, that's pretty clear. That's pretty clear. You'd say that about anything. You know, you'd say no more aspirin. And if you give a date and you know how long aspirin stays in your system, then okay. The problem with meldonium is that they said it stayed in the system for 30 days. Turns out it stays in your system somewhere between 90 and 120 days. So let's say you knew it was going to be tested for any time after January 1st. If you were told you had a 30-day window, you would stop taking it December 1st.
Right.
Or if you were smart, November 1st. The problem is it stayed in their system longer. And so we found out that people that were testing positive for meldonium in March, even April, we kind of have to take them at their word that they didn't take it after January 1st, because scientific testing showed it did stay in the system 90 to 120 days. Now, we don't know when they took it. All we know is it's in their system. But because of that, you kind of have to give them the benefit of the doubt. The problem was that for Sharapova, they actually had some evidence that she had taken it afterwards. For Efremova, there was no evidence she had taken it after January 1st. So she was reinstated, she was allowed to swim, and Lily King, who did not take meldonium as far as we know, beat her fair and square. Now, beat her fair and square also goes the other way. Efremova beat everybody else fair and square. And so Lily King took her silver medal and took a big giant poop all over it by calling her a cheater. She was released, and in her previous suspension for a different substance, she served her suspension and came back. So if you're going to say that, if you're going to say once a cheater, always a cheater, all those medals that Michael Phelps won are going to have to go away. And that's going to make Americans a little uncomfortable with what Lily King said.
Right. Well, and, you know, certainly watching the American coverage of the games, you know, there's a strong bent. And, you know, I realize the Cold War has been over for, you know, 20 years or longer, but there's still the, you know, kind of us versus them and the, you know, the evil Soviet Empire. And, you know, it was certainly not spun that way. It was spun as, you know,
this wasn't just an American dispersion thing, though. You know, I did a piece with the BBC, and they were talking about the very same thing, because you know, the Russians flat out cheated. Yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of their people, their track and field team, their weightlifting team, were banned. And there was discussion of keeping them all the way out. I know in the Paralympics, for God's sakes, the Paralympics are supposed to be everything that's right about sports. It's almost right. Like cheating in the Special Olympics. But the Russian Federation has been banned from the Paralympics because of the just absolute cheating that was systemic to it. So this isn't just an us against them, Americans versus Russian thing, which we all think is a big deal. This is everybody realizing the Russians just flat out cheated. I don't think we would care if it, you know, the Chinese, like I said, 15 medalists stripped from 2008 when that was obviously a point of national pride for the Chinese.
Right.
I think, you know, there was a pretty major issue in track. There, I forget the woman's name. I'm sorry. She was from Ethiopia. Her coach was caught cheating. He was supplying drugs to some people, and she was the one that won the, I think, 10,000 meters by like half a lap. Just blew everybody away.
Mm-hmm.
She took the test. She passed the test. So do we cast aspersions on her because she had a coach that cheated? Well, certainly you can give her the side eye. Certainly you can cast aspersions, but the fact is she passed the test. And if the tests don't count, if we don't believe the tests, and this is the problem in Major League Baseball, if we're not going to take the tests at their word, essentially, why do we even bother?
Right. And I know, you know, one of Jeff's points was, I wish that he could be here tonight, and unfortunately he's not feeling well, because he would probably be able
to
phrase
it come back
better. We would love to have you back anytime. You know, one of his points was, you know, the reason that the United States so dominated, I think we had a 51 medal lead over the next closest country, China. I mean, that's huge. You're not talking, you know, just a small difference. I mean, China was 70 total medals over Britain, 67, yeah. And then 121 for the United States. So his point was, you know, sure that, you know, these drugs like meldonium, but we've got, you know, top researchers who are working on things that we don't even have, you know, testing, you know, yeah, in place.
No, see, there's something we can address that pretty quickly.
Okay.
Like I said, 15 Chinese were caught with 2008 samples using a substance called GHRP2. Now, I won't get into GHRP2. I'll tell you it's a peptide. I'll tell you it's banned. But I'll tell you there's never been a point where this hasn't been tested for from the point that we knew about it, which was about 2010. GHRP2 is a peptide that it's basically something you put into the body, and it tells the body to produce a substance. Instead of injecting the substance, this is sort of like a signaler.
Okay.
And we've known about GHRP2, and we've known about other things called prohormones, and we've known about other things called peptides for a long time, because the companies developing them work with the FDA, they work with WADA, they work with USADA, which is the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency. And they say, hey, we're working on this thing. Because when you think about the drugs that have really been overused and abused, you're talking about things in cycling like EPO. You're talking about things in cycling like SIRA. You're talking about things like HGH. You're talking about EPOGEN. All of these things were developed for really serious medical conditions. Pretty much everything Lance Armstrong used was also used to save his life from cancer. Now, if you're going through chemotherapy as he was, and they give you EPOGEN, which tells your body to produce red blood cells and not have anemia as you're going through this, which often leads to death before the use of EPOGEN, you would say, this is amazing. You know, if I tell you it's Lance Armstrong with testicular cancer, there's, you know, a reaction to it at this point. Used to be inspirational, right. Now it's the opposite. If I tell you, you know, it's grandpa who has prostate cancer, and EPOGEN is going to allow him to live through the chemotherapy when 40% of people died before, suddenly you have different feelings about this drug.
Sure.
So all these drugs we've known about, when we've known about them for a long time, at about the point we know about them, they get tested for. These are not hard to test for. Drug tests are really kind of like if you watch Law & Order and you ever see them sit them down at the desk. I've always wondered why they never computerized these. But those flip books where it's like a whole bunch of mugshots. And it's like, you know, you're looking for the guy that stole your purse or, you know, the guy who ripped you off in Times Square. And you're going through. If the guy's picture's not there, you can't point him out. Mm-hmm. So once you know about the drug, once you know the drug exists, you can go through the chromatography, you can work up a profile, and you basically put the picture in the mug book. Now the computers and the testing equipment go through it and suddenly say, oh, look, that's the guy that stole my purse.
I get you. So we don't have better scientists who are cooking up things that have not, or we might, but we'll eventually get found out if we do.
Well, the second they're found out, if you go back to Barry Bonds and Balco, they had a drug called THG, tetrahydrogestinone, which nobody knew existed. They kind of did. It came from a 1966 East German textbook, and they said, this is amazingly effective, but it will tear up your liver.
Right.
So we never produced it. Well, a guy in suburban Illinois said, I like this really effective part, and I don't so much care about the liver part. So I'm going to produce it, and I'm going to sell it. And he found a guy in San Francisco that paid him $500, and that guy in San Francisco gave it out to a whole bunch of athletes. Now, once we had the sample of THG, which came, oddly enough, from a track coach that didn't like the fact that other people were getting this and he wasn't, it took seconds, literally seconds, to put this through a system and have a test. And the minute they did, people started popping up. If you enjoyed Usain Bolt, you might remember Justin Gatlin. And Justin Gatlin was one of the guys who tested positive for testosterone. If you remember Tyson Gay, who was, I think, on the 4x100 relay, I don't think he qualified for the final in the 100 meters, but he has before. He once held the world's record. He tested positive for THG. So this was widely, and I mean widely, used in track and field. So the second we have that, it gets out. That is really the last time that we've had a secret sauce. THG and one other drug called MDT that came out at the same time, and WADA actually didn't tell anybody. They were like, oh, yep, we got you on the THG. And they waited to see if they'd catch anybody with the MDT. And they caught one bodybuilder, but it wasn't nearly widely as used because it had even nastier side effects. It would actually, your hair would basically fall out and parts of you would shrink that you didn't want shrinking so much that you could actually watch it, is how it was described in one document. Since then, most of the drug development has been on things like peptides. It's been taking things that's already out there and using it in different ways, and they get caught. I wrote my book The Juice in 2005. THG was a big deal then. I don't know of any secret sauce since then.
Okay.
And I believe I would know.
Will, is it WADA that does the testing for the Olympics?
No, WADA certifies. WADA is sort of like the UN. They don't really do a whole lot by design. But they set out the labs. You might have heard that the Rio lab had a ton of problems. They were decertified by WADA just a couple months before because they didn't have the right equipment. They couldn't do things in the right amount of time. They had done some tests and said, you know, they just weren't good enough. It's like, you know, the food inspector. The food inspector goes to your restaurant and they saw a cockroach and they didn't like it, so they pulled your certification. They came back and they said, oh, look, you got rid of the cockroaches. Okay, go. That's kind of what happened. WADA sort of sits back. They're the overarching body. They look out for things. They fund a lot of research. But in most cases, it's actually the country itself that's required to do it. Here in the U.S., it's USADA. The USADA, Anti-Doping Agency, they handle all the Olympic sports. They also have been contracted as an independent administrator for the UFC. And we've seen the UFC over the last 6 months since they did this come up with a lot of positive tests suddenly. And some of their biggest names, Brock Lesnar, John Jones, and they're handling that. The case I talked about with the 10,000 meter runner from Ethiopia, I always think of Ethiopia. And my first thought is, look at all these runners. Is this what I gave to, Live Aid for?
Sally Struthers.
Sally Struthers, yeah. You know, is one of these guys. You know, I would feel pretty good with my $2 a month or whatever Sally right. asked for if it became an Olympic athlete, but I also feel pretty good if it was somebody else. But, you know, Ethiopia, I always think of Live Aid. And I was like, you know, Live Aid was a long time ago. That was, you know, some of these kids are probably alive because of that. But I don't think of Ethiopia as a country that should be spending, you know, millions of dollars on drug testing. And the fact is, it turns out they're not. They're evidently pretty weak. Their drug control program is pretty problematic. They found one of the coaches was using a lot of drugs and giving them out to his athletes. And I kind of understand that. Doesn't make it better, but you also have to remember, if these people go to major championships, they're being tested in competition. Mm-hmm. The out of competition, whole different thing, certainly problematic. You would think that major countries, Russia, the US, Britain, European countries, certainly China. China is the one that's interesting because, you know, we've seen that Russia had an absolute systematic abuse of the process. We kind of assume that China's doing the same thing. You know, I think there's a very jingoistic view of, you know, if the Chinese win, they have to be cheating. And I imagine they probably have the same view of us, in the same way that somebody looks at Katie Ledecky blowing away the field and says, she's got to have access to some drug. We think the same thing about, you know, Usain Bolt, who there's been a lot of drug use in Jamaica. And there's some question about how strict their drug control is and how many out of competition tests he's taken. But you know what? He's never failed a drug test. And a lot of guys he's beaten have.
Mm-hmm. All right, so switching off of drugs for a while. First of all, I should have given more of an introduction. Will Carroll, who has written for Sports Illustrated, The Bleacher Report, FanDuel, a couple books, all kinds of stuff. And Will and I are acquaintances from way back. In fact,
way back.
Will, I think you were the one that introduced me to Nate Silver.
Yeah.
Before he took over
the world.
Do you still talk to him, or is he just too big time now?
He's kind of big time, but, you know, occasionally, you know, I follow him to kind of make sure that the world hasn't gone to hell completely. And, you know, he was...
The 538 Nate Silver?
The 538.
And, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nate and I joined Baseball Prospectus back in 2003, and I went on to write about injuries, and Nate, you know, went on to elect president.
Yeah, and... Will and I went to a ball game way back when. That's when I actually met Nate. So Baseball Prospectus, that's when I first ran into Will. And you actually wrote an interesting article recently for the Joe Sheehan newsletter, which covers all things mm-hmm. baseball, talking about VR, virtual reality, and augmented reality in baseball and the potential that it has. Can you tell us a little bit about what baseball has the opportunity to do?
Yeah, you know, it's really intriguing. And Joe was the third of that bunch. It was me and Joe and Nate that came in when Baseball Prospectus actually went to a subscription model. Oh, my God, paying for content. Maybe that'll work someday. Virtual reality is very interesting in that, you know, we've been told for years it's coming, that we've had these lawnmower man views of it. But the fact is that, you know, it's something less than that. It's something more than what we're seeing with augmented reality, which is the Pokemon Go kind of thing where you hold up your phone and you see something. There are ways that augmented reality is going to be interesting. Pokemon Go, to me, not interesting.
Come on, Will. What team are you on? I know you play.
No, I literally do not play.
Go ahead.
I play something stupid like Clash Royale. but Pokemon, yeah, it's just the Pokemon thing. I never got into that on the first round of the cards. I've never played any of those cards games. But you know, imagine if you could go to a party, hold up your phone, and it would tell you, you know, oh, there's Joe, who is, you know, he's a CEO at someplace. And, oh, I would like, for me, I can't remember names. I am the absolute worst at it. I was at a food festival today here in Indianapolis, and, you know, I see people and I'm like, oh, I know that guy. Who is that? If I had a program, if I had an app that could pop that up, I would pay a lot of money for that. And that's where augmented reality is going. But virtual reality, at this point, we're not getting the big, you know, Star Trek holodeck kind of experience. Maybe we will someday, but the early experience is going to be a lot more along the lines of what we've seen with some of the lesser things, especially games. And that's always been the lead. If you have a new technology, you have to get games and you have to get porn. And that's really the two things where virtual reality is starting to come together. We'll leave the porn to a different discussion, but for games, sports have always been huge. You know, Madden has, I can't tell you how many PS whatever generation we're on, or Xbox whatever, have been sold because you could play Madden or because you could play FIFA. You know, soccer is probably more popular because of FIFA than anything the MLS has ever done. So we've gone through this generation of games, and we've gone through this technological evolution. The next one is to VR. We've seen something of that with the Microsoft Kinect, which is the camera system that allows you to follow through. We've seen something of that with the Nintendo, where you can actually, you know, you wave the thing around and play tennis or bowl or whatever. But with VR, we're going to see the next generation. But think about sports. If I put on a headset and hold a controller, please tell me how I'm going to play football. You know, I can't take a controller and throw a football. I can't take a controller and run up and tackle somebody in my living room. It just doesn't work. If I'm playing FIFA VR, it's very hard for me to run 100 yards and then kick a ball past, you know, the hot goalie of the day. If I'm, you know, playing basketball, you know, you can have a VR headset on me. How am I going to dribble around Michael Jordan and then dunk over Patrick Ewing? I'm showing my age with these names, but it just doesn't match to the experience we can have. Baseball does. Baseball is a stationary game. Baseball is pastoral. It's one man with a bat and one man with a ball standing on a mound. Now, if you tell me I can be the batter and hold something that looks like a bat, say a controller, and I have a virtual reality headset and I'm watching the pitch come in, that's easy. We can do that now. Now, if you tell me I've got another controller that feels like a baseball, and if I can throw it and, you know, maybe I get a little power up Mario style, and instead of the 60 mile an hour fastball I have, I've done pretty well. And suddenly I have a 90 mile an hour fastball that I'm trying to throw past, you know, Barry Bonds. Or Giancarlo Stanton. Stanton's hurt. So Hunter Pence, just because...
Chris Bryant.
Yeah, Chris Bryant. Hunter Pence would look funnier in virtual reality. So, yeah, those are easy things. You don't have to fix the pace of play. You don't have to fix anything. In fact, pace of play, people are going to understand. You want to take a breath if you're the pitcher. You want to step out of the box and hold on. I think that if baseball just holds on and waits for virtual reality, which is at worst a year to 2 years away, they're going to be in a great position.
So that's for the video game aspect. But even I think on broadcast, if they put some cameras on like the catcher's helm, wouldn't it be great to sort of relive that at bat? From the eyes of Chris Bryant or whoever?
Yeah, you know, they've done that a little bit, and it just looks odd. The fact is that we have a hard time putting ourselves in that position because we've never been in that position. What is it supposed to look like if you're Jonathan Lucroy? What is it supposed to look like if you're Yadier Molina? What do you do back there? And it's one thing to see it. It's another thing to live it. And I don't think the catcher cam has ever really caught on because it's just odd. But with virtual reality, if you suddenly are Chris Bryant, if you've powered yourself up and you've got that kind of swing, maybe you don't really have the swing, but you get the 30% bonus because you've bought the Chris Bryant character, it could work. And it's much, much easier to figure out how to do that than it is to turn somebody into Andrew Luck.
I mean, is there an application to jump outside of games and actual into, you know, training for high schoolers who,
you know,
okay, so I'm used to standing down 60, 70 mile an hour pitchers, and now I can simulate standing down thousands of 80, 100 mile an hour pitches to get my tempo, to get my swing down. Does that translate into practical applications for practice in the real world?
Absolutely. And it makes it accessible. There are systems now where you could, it projects video onto a screen where you can bat against some of these guys, but it's a really expensive system. You know, we're going to get down to the Xbox level, like I said, within a year, maybe 2 years at the outside, where it's not that you have to have some $1 million system. You're going to have a $400 system in front of your mom's big screen TV. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be just the big rich high schools in the suburbs that have this. It's going to be everybody. And we're already seeing this with colleges. In football, it's a system called Striver that uses the Oculus Rift system. And coaches are actually using this more than the players. It's actually a backwards application. They thought they would have the virtual reality that would go through the plays, and you could watch the defense, and you could say, okay, I'm Andrew Luck, I'm going left. Oh, T.Y. Hilton's covered. I'm okay, Moncrief's open, and I throw it over here. Turns out it's not that. It's the coaches trying to figure out what the players are looking at. They'll go back and look at the practices that they did on that and say, oh, wait, why didn't Andrew see this? Instead of throwing to Moncrief, he should have thrown to Dwayne Allen, who was wide open over the middle, and you could kind of eye track him. So there's a lot of application to that. But yeah, you know, you could give me a million virtual cuts at a 95 mile an hour fastball. I'm not going to be able to hit it, but there's some kid out there who probably can.
Hmm. I kind of want to see that too. And I think you referenced this in your article, like, sometimes we watch on TV and it seems so obvious. Why did the quarterback throw it right to that defensive back? I'd kind of like to see what was he looking at, and why did he throw it just right then?
We've had those technologies, you know, the kind of helmet cam for years, and it just looks weird because we don't have that. Where I think that technology is going to come in is, especially for the NFL, they've got NFL Network. They've only got games on Sunday. Well, they've got games on freaking every day right now. But, you know, the games on Sunday, by Thursday, you should be able to analyze. And if there was a helmet cam or a virtual reality that you could have that sort of analysis on Thursday, and that's great content. But I think with baseball, I think that from the pure gaming standpoint, it's going to help the game levels above. I think this is going to be really the differentiator for baseball over the rest of the sports over this next generation of gaming.
So do you think this will spell a resurgence in, you know, console baseball gaming, other solitary type sports? Like, I could see golf possibly benefiting.
Golf is the other one, because again, it's stationary. You don't have to run around, and nobody's figured that part out. Mm-hmm. Now, people have already always talked about virtual reality a little bit like laser tag. You know, you'd have some big giant setup where you could. We don't have that. You know, most people don't have that in their homes. You know, even for Kinect, which needed about 8 to 10 feet, was problematic. I know with me, when I got my first system, it was like a situation where, you know, I was backed up against my couch and it just didn't work because, hey, right, that's what we live with. So, yeah, it's certainly an issue where I think the gaming is going to lead it. And like I said, gaming and porn lead technology.
yeah, and we've actually talked a little bit about the VR pornography, and it's I don't understand that one. There's some things that I like a little distance and less intimacy with myself, but you are right.
All right, well, we have to let Will go. We sure appreciate his time, but before you go, Will, could you tell us what you love?
Yeah, you know, I was talking to you guys beforehand, and I'm a huge technology guy, probably too much so, but a lot of people are down on the Apple Watch, and I absolutely love mine. You know, to me, it's such a Buck Rogers technology. You know, yes, you can take calls on it. Yes, you can do so many things. But to me, it's so much easier and honestly a little bit more polite to glance at your watch and say, oh, you know, it's a call from Jim. Oh, it's a call from Todd. I can ignore that for now. because I'm in a meeting. But, you know, if it buzzes you twice and you say, oh, it's a call from my wife, or it's a call from my doctor, or it's a call from my CEO, that's where it's really different. You know, people always thought there were going to be applications, that it was going to be kind of an iPhone writ smaller. For me, it's just an absolute game changer in the terms of notifications and how it deals with things. Also, the other big thing for me is I have some heart problems, and I have to track my heart rate, and it does it perfectly and uploads it. And last time I went to my cardiologist, I showed him the charts of what I was doing each and every day. And he, you know, he was like, this is amazing. I'm an early adopter, but I don't think it's going to be too far in the future where everybody has this, whether it's Apple or Android or something else, where we can get all sorts of medical data, not just heart rate, and really make a difference in that space. And I know Apple seems to be pushing that way.
Yeah, they're doing some amazing stuff. I the rumors are they're going to announce possibly the Apple Watch 2 here in a few weeks. So hopefully we'll learn some new things and see if they can stimulate the market.
I've
again.
I know that, another one.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. It's going to be faster and thinner, and you're going to want it. Yeah,
you have two arms. You can put one on each wrist.
Next thing you tell me is you're going to have a new iPhone.
I know, crazy them coming out with a new one every single year.
The bastards.
And I'm salivating. I'm salivating for it. Can't wait. So, Will, if people want to follow you online, like stay
why
up on
would they
the things
that
you're
that?
Writing, why
you
would
know,
they want
you,
to do that?
If you're forced to, if you think you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter at InjuryExpert, or you can follow me at various different places on the web. You know, my Facebook page is at InjuryExpert, and it's an exciting time because injuries, technology, it's all coming together.
Awesome. Well, hey, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Will.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Okay, so that was awesome. Some really cool stuff. I wish Jeff could have been here for this one. I wish his stupid allergies weren't bothering him so much because I think he would have had some interesting insight, but that's very cool stuff.
I know. I think he would have had some questions about all of the drug testing, et cetera, but that's all right. He'll listen to this and have 10 questions next time that we have somebody back on.
It gives us an excuse to ask Will to come back and talk to us some more. That would be awesome.
So, Jacob, I noticed in the notes that you have a thing here about the Note 7, which is on one of my lists here to check out when my contract is up in November. It failed the speed test?
Okay, so it didn't fail the speed test, but it was embarrassed by a year-old phone.
Oh my gosh.
I know. There was a video that went around, I think, last week, and it kind of went viral among mobile nerds. So, you know, most people probably have no idea what this means, because they're not nerdy like we are. But those of us who really are passionate about our Androids and our iPhones, you know, may have seen this. There was a video put out. I don't know who put it out, but they took a brand new, hot off the presses Galaxy Note 7, and they took a tired, almost year-old iPhone 6S, and they put them side by side. They loaded up the same applications on both of them, and I did not write down the full list. I want to say it was about a dozen applications, but it was... Uh-huh. They were apps that were available for both platforms. They rebooted both phones, so, you know, cold boot and nothing running other than just whatever it takes to get the phone up and running. And then they started on both phones at the same time. They started a stopwatch, and then they went through and loaded each app in turn until the app came up and was responsive. And it was a combination of, you know, like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, you know, basic, you know, social and,
sure,
and businessy type apps. They also had some games, and there was a video rendering app, I guess, that's quite taxing. And like I said, all in all, it was about a dozen apps. And so they went through one at a time, and the iPhone was able to open every app, get to the point of usability within the app, including rendering a video, which they commented really requires taxing the GPU in the phone. And it was able to go through that entire list two times before the Note 7 finished the first time through the list. It actually beat it by 13 seconds, completely lapping the Note 7. People were quick to point out that the Note 7 is sporting one of Qualcomm's newer chips, 14 nanometer Snapdragon 820.
Right.
It's a quad core 64-bit processor. It has 4 gigs of RAM. I believe the iPhone has 2 gigabytes of RAM. The iPhone does have a custom developed A9 chip. Apple owns that ARM series. They bought ARM, a few years ago, and have since been turning out their own chips. And a lot of people are saying that that's one of the benefits of being so tightly integrated with your hardware and your software, that you can, you know, obviously do a lot of optimizations for the hardware, because in theory, you know it intimately. Whereas, you know, the Galaxy folks are writing a more, you know, they're writing to generic code because it has to run on a wide variety of platforms. Although they do target, you know, in theory, optimizing it to the Snapdragon 820 and the Note 7. Something interesting from the Motley Fool. So not just a tech blog that has an axe to grind, but they said, quote, with results from this new speed test making rounds just weeks before Apple launches the latest iPhone, which is rumored to include an even faster and more efficient A10 processor and possibly even more RAM, is the iPhone's real world performance about to take an unprecedented leap ahead of the competition? And you know, there's definitely no speculation that Apple tends to put a new generation processor in every new phone that comes out, whether it's the 6, the 6S, the 7. I mean, unless something just really, they've got a trick up their sleeve, everybody's anticipating a new A10 processor, which, you know, I think I've read that people are still stunned at the power in the A9. The processor and the GPU is pretty unbelievable. And I mean, this kind of side-by-side test really was surprising. I was shocked to see the Note 7 not just fail, but fail by quite a wide margin. I mean, it was a Ledecky-level loss. you know, on a phone that's, 9-10 months old, something like that. So I'm sure real world, it probably doesn't, you don't notice it. But, you know, that's the fun thing about all of the measure baiting that goes on, is that, you know, when it comes down to it, you can go, well, my phone runs faster than yours because it's got a better processor in it. But I mean, it is interesting. And I know you're an Android guy. I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that, Todd.
Samsung, you're killing me. I wonder if it's their Tizen software. I wonder if that has anything to do with it. I mean, that's their, how Samsung layers over their take on Android. And I don't know if they've got so much built into it extra that it's slowing it down. I know my phone, I have an S5, which is obviously a couple years old, but there are times between switching apps that it can get bogged down a little bit. But it's disappointing because, you know, the hardware on the Note 7 seems to be top notch and it looks really good. But you're going to notice that if you launch apps and they hang like that, it's going to be, you know, a subpar experience. Can't you just like press the stylus really quick on the screen, you know, tap it a bunch of times to get it to run faster? Does that not work?
I don't know. And to your point, that's a good one. Now, obviously the Note has only been out, just not even a month yet. I think
right.
It just came out in August and we're recording this towards the end of August. Would it be better with a custom ROM? I don't even know if there are custom ROMs for the Note 7 yet. I know that they cook them up just about as quick as the handsets come out. You know, can you put CyanogenMod on a Note 7 yet? And would that change the performance? I don't know. But
nobody's, you know, going to do that, though. Very few people who get the Note 7 are going to bother with trying to get Cyanogen on there, because you have to break NOx, and that is going to void your warranty anyway.
Well, you know, but the people who are going to do it probably don't care about that so much. But I got to think that just the overall percentage of people that put a custom ROM on an Android phone, I mean, what are we even in the double digits? I mean, it's probably,
it's got to be
probably under
5%
even. Because when I had an Android phone and was doing that, you know, nobody of my contemporaries was doing that. They're like, what do you mean? I just use it. I use the phone. Why are you fiddling with it?
I haven't even done that.
Yeah.
Mine.
I mean, I don't know that would really, you know, show some hidden speed that maybe is there that is being, you know, drugged down by Samsung's bloat. But, you know, we're in theory less than 30 days away from a new iPhone. So even if, you know, running CyanogenMod or one of those other custom ROMs on the Note 7 would increase and maybe make it much more comparable to the iPhone 6S, potentially it's going to be leapfrogged again here in, you know, 3-4 weeks. So again, I don't think that's going to stop people from buying Galaxy Notes. I think that they're going to be hugely popular. Certainly people who like the Samsung platform and specifically the Note platform are going to buy it. I've got coworkers who are fiercely loyal to the Note platform, and they won't look at anything else. And what is Android has a little over 80% of the market share now, right?
Worldwide, maybe.
Yeah, worldwide. I don't know what it is in the United States, but it's like 82, almost 83% globally.
And yeah, but those aren't Note 7s.
They're not.
Mostly cheaper phones when you look at worldwide.
But my point is, I don't think you're going to see, you know, droves of people abandoning their Galaxies to come over to the iPhone just because the iPhone is faster in you know, this particular test. But I thought it was really interesting. And I really haven't seen the Android fanboys firing back much yet. I'm sure that there is stuff out there, but it's been conspicuously quiet. So listeners who are, you know, devotees of Android Central and all about Android and all of those Android sites, you know, what are they saying? Have they even acknowledged it? I would be very curious to know.
Yeah, I haven't gone onto the forums to see, but that might be interesting. I'll have to do a little research on it.
And I find it funny that, you know, no matter what, people get so, you know, frothing at the mouth on either side of, you know, the iPhone people are screaming, oh, look how amazing the iPhone is. And, you know, the Android people, I'm sure, have their reason that the Android is infinitely superior and the iPhone people are all idiots who probably are never going to have sex. And I find that part of it funny that, you know, you can't just go, huh, we've got a lot of amazing choices, but
that's the way the internet works.
It is. The internet is really kind of a horrible place. I had one other story I think we've got probably time to get to, praising the iPhone, we come here not to praise Caesar, but to bury him. Now we have to give a little bit of due to the other side of it. Apparently, there is a thing going around that's predominantly affecting iPhone 6s, so not the 6S, the 6. And the internet has taken to calling it touch disease. Touch disease, which is a terrible moniker. It seems to be affecting mostly iPhone 6s and some 6 pluses. And apparently these third-party repair centers are saying that they are swamped with requests to fix what Apple's genius bars can't or won't. So conspiracy theories abound that Apple is refusing to acknowledge that this is a problem because, surprise, surprise, a new iPhone model is coming out in a few weeks. And why would we fix your, you know, nasty old 2-year-old phone when you could just upgrade to this brand new shiny piece of sex on glass? I mean, why wouldn't you, really?
See, I have to take issue with that, because while I've had poor experiences at the Genius Bar as far as the time, how long it takes, once, you know, I have an appointment and it might still be an hour or more before I actually get to talk to somebody. Once I get to talk to them, they're really good about giving me, you know, new hardware or fixing the hardware that I have. But anyway,
absolutely. That's just the conspiracy du jour, is that Apple is aware of this and they are ignoring it and acting like it doesn't exist, and the Genius Bar is turning people away, saying, "Well, it's you broke it and it's out of warranty." So what is happening is for some people, and I don't know how widespread it is. I mean, it's not like 100% of phones, or probably even more than 10% of phones. But people are noticing that they are having a gray flickering bar appear at the top of the display. Whoa. And the touchscreen becomes unresponsive. So people are calling this touch disease, and they're saying that they can quote unquote cure it by pushing on the screen and flexing the innards. And reconnecting some possibly shorted out or loose connections inside of there, but inevitably the problem comes back. And they are also being told that there's nothing that they can be done to fix the problem because these phones are out of warranty. And so apparently Apple's support forums have tons of complaints. And I will admit, Apple is slow to acknowledge design problems, but when they finally do, they are excellent at going back and fixing them. I had an old one of the original iMacs, the G5 iMac, and but one day started having weird flickery things going on, and just kind of chalked it up to it was an older computer, and eventually it just stopped working. And I had found online that there were a batch of bad capacitors that had gotten used in a bunch of these iMacs. And if yours was in a serial number range, Apple would repair the motherboard. And I looked up, and sure enough, mine was. And it was way, way outside of warranty. I mean, years outside of warranty. And I made a Genius appointment and took it in. And it was at an Apple repair center for 4 or 5 days and came back and was fixed up good as new. I had the exact same thing happen with my MacBook Pro. There was a problem with the video card in certain models, and mine was affected outside of the warranty. They fixed it up, and it's worked great ever since. So sometimes getting them to acknowledge it is the problem. Apparently, opening up and replacing the logic board and the touch ICs on the logic board will fix this problem. And so there are third-party repair companies that are doing that. And this problem's definitely not been, you know, just brought up by nobody's. I mean, even iFixit has kind of led the charge on this, saying that potentially the softer aluminum alloy used in the 6 and the 6 Plus is to blame, because I don't know if you remember Bendgate from a few years ago, Todd, where everybody was, you know, the sky is falling because our phones are bending. And they actually used a stronger, or I guess a more brittle alloy in the 6S and 6 Plus S or 6S Plus that makes it less prone to bending. So people are speculating that there's just enough flex that things can get all cattywampus when you put your phone in your pocket and sit down or whatnot. And it's causing some separations and some flexing in there and shorting things out or making solder connections loose. And that's what's causing this problem. So I don't know if we'll see an official response from Apple. So far, nothing. But there's a lot of people complaining. And again, I don't know what percentage of people are actually affected and what percentage of people are jumping on the bandwagon of, you know, see, Apple's a piece of crap. They're a terrible company and they should go out of business, because that's the internet for you.
Yeah, see, I see touch disease and some of it a gray bar, and I just think of Game of Thrones. You know, it's the gray men that you don't want to let them touch you.
Yeah, the stone men or what
yeah, are they? Yeah, I see. Stone I think Apple is ahead of the curve again with the pop culture references.
Yeah, except you really don't want this one, whether it turns you into a rock man or ruins your mobile device. So, you know, fortunately, knock on wood, touch wood, wherever you, whatever the colloquialism where you're from, my iPhone 6S has been fine, and I'm happy with that. But a lot of people are freaking out about it, so.
All right, well, I think we've kept our good listeners long enough this week. I would like to talk about what I love.
Tell me what you love, Todd.
And it is the pair of headphones.
Oh, okay. I'm always down for a good pair of headphones.
The JBL Synchros S300 Premium on-ear headphones. And I got those on a deal through Newegg for about $30. Okay. You know, they say it's a deal. It says I saved $120. Did they ever really charge $150 for these? I don't know. But they're very nice. They have great bass range. They cover over the ears really well and block the sound really well. And they fold up. They have a nice little carrying case. I really enjoy them. I typically use them for every podcast we do, except for tonight when my old laptop that I was using now will not boot up. I'm in an infinite boot loop with Windows 10. But that's not what I love. I don't love Windows 10. I love my JBL Synchros S300 headphones, and I can highly recommend those if you want a good pair of headphones that have great sound and are very convenient to travel with.
Very cool. I think I know how I can solve your infinite boot loop problem.
Oh, yeah?
It involves a trip to the Apple store and a credit card.
Yeah, well, it's a five-year-old laptop now. Maybe I need to get a new laptop.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that thing is downright geriatric.
So maybe Windows, or maybe Apple's the way to go.
You know, I would highly recommend a long, hard look at a MacBook Air. Like, if my laptop just died tomorrow, that's probably what I would replace it with. Yeah, it's a little spendy. It'd be about $1,000, but for what any average person needs, it is more than enough computer.
Oh, no, sir. See, this is a gaming laptop. So my budget is more like in the $1,900 range. So I have to have a laptop that, like, will play Windows games. So as long as I can get an Apple that that will let me play games on Windows, I could live with that.
Well, you could always use Boot Camp and boot into Windows.
Exactly.
I don't know why you would want to, but you could. And hey, there's a lot of games that are available via Steam on Mac now. Maybe
really?
Not quite as many. There are. Maybe okay. Not quite as many as on Windows. But
got to play Diablo 3. That's all it's really got to play.
I know Diablo 3 is available. I have played Diablo 3 on my MacBook Pro, so it is out there. I don't know how it compares to a gaming Windows machine, but it is available for what it's worth. And I'm always on the lookout for a good pair of on-ear headphones, although about the only place I use them anymore is for the podcast. Like, I don't cut the grass with on-ear headphones because, you know, it's not 1970 anymore.
These were supposed to be for that type of thing, for cutting the grass and for, you know, kind of blocking out the sounds of the mower. But for some reason, they got brought in to do podcasts for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, well, there you go. So what I love is an iOS-only app, but it is pretty cool. It is called Friendly Social. And what it is, I think it's probably been about a month ago, we were talking about some of the conspiracies floating around about the Facebook app listening to people's conversations and some odd things going on where my wife and I were talking about things that suddenly started appearing in the Facebook ads, which was really kind of sketchy. And I've also been having some battery performance issues. And every time I would look, it was the Facebook app. And I just got mad and I took it off my phone and hey, it resolved all my problems. But then I had to go and use the mobile version, which admittedly is pretty good, but it's not a great solution for me because it would open up in Safari and yada, yada, yada. I found this app called Friendly. Again, it's only available for iOS. I don't even know if they have plans for an Android version. So sorry, all you Android folks. And what it is it's basically an app that is a web wrapper for Facebook Mobile, but it delivers a really nice Facebook experience. And what's really cool is it has a built-in ad blocker, which will block all of the inline Facebook ads, as well as any ads in URLs that you visit that someone has linked to, like, you know, 13 amazing things that celebrities have said, what number two was will make your jaw hit the table. So if you click on those, you know, normally you're bombarded with ads and Friendly will strip them all out, which is really nice. The app itself is free. It does have an in-app banner ad and it does not disable the Facebook ads or remote ads in the free mode. I think it's about $2.99. if you want to purchase it and unlock it. But I will say this, my battery life has much improved and casual conversations have stopped resulting in ads appearing on Facebook. So, you know, I can highly recommend checking it out. It's a really nice experience. It's called Friendly Social and you can check it out at friendly.io. That is Friendly. .io or at the Apple App Store. So that's what I love.
Yeah, that's good. And you know, I don't use the Facebook app on Android. It's just too much of a resource hog.
Right, it is on everything.
So anytime you can get around that, I think you're going to help the performance of your phone.
Oh, absolutely. And about the only thing that doesn't work as well is uploading media. So like if you want to upload pictures, you can still do it, but I think you're limited to like 3 or 5 picture uploads through the web. Mobile version, whereas obviously with the iOS Facebook app and with the Android Facebook app, you know, it's tied right into your camera roll and you can select pictures and up. So, I mean, you gotta want to not be using Facebook. So, I mean, there are some hoops and idiosyncrasies, but if you're willing to live with those, it works really well. So check it out if you are an iPhone user and having problems with Facebook app just taking over your phone and doing nasty things. So there you go. All right, so we are wrapping it up. I want to stop and thank our patrons because I think we forgot to do it last week. So sorry, guys. We do appreciate you. So thank you, Carl, Dennis, Jamie, Jeffrey, Jimmy, John, Kai, Scott, and this other patron. I can never remember his name.
You shouldn't mention that one.
Oh, I shouldn't mention that one. Patron / host. See what happens if you support the show enough. We may just say, supporting's not good enough anymore. You got to come on and you got to host with us.
You too can be a co-host.
That's right. We could have co-hosts.
There we go.
What's the plural of hosts? Is like hi? Like, can you pluralize that like you do with Greek?
I need to brush up on my Latin.
Latin or Greek, one of the two. Anyway, if you guys have a question, a comment, you want to rail about something stupid we said, or just let us know something. We would love to hear from you. And as always, you can call our comment line. That number is 317-643-1212. You will talk to a robot the way God intended, not a human. So even people who are socially anxious can call in and feel confident in the fact that someone is not going to go, hello, and put you on the spot. It is just a machine. You follow us on Twitter at No Better Show and visit our website at www.nobettershow.com. We would love to hear from you via email if you are so inclined. Our email address, as always, is feedback@nobettershow.com. We read them all, and if yours is interesting, we will read it on the air and make you internet famous. Go and do the iTunes thing. That really helps us out. Give us a couple of stars. Write a review if you haven't. Heck, even just tell your friends about us. All of that is good, and we greatly appreciate it. And again, if you want to throw a couple of bucks our way and support the show, keep the lights on, that is wonderful too, and you can do that at patreon.com/nobettershow. We hope you guys have a great week. You have just listened to the No Better Than Average podcast, so hopefully now you know better than average too. Have a great week, everybody.
Talk at you later, everybody.